been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When you take a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When you take a swim, only option is to win. Well, hello, listeners. It's the Shrimp Tank. It's Thursday, and we are live in the studio. We've got an exciting show for you today, and we broadcast every Thursday. This is the show where we interview Houston's best and brightest business owners and entrepreneurs, and actually entrepreneurs all across the state of Texas, about the do's and don'ts of growing, building a successful business. We've got Steve Maloof in the studio with us today. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, great. Got an all-star cast, as always. Got Tom Glover over here.
How you doing?
Yeah. Drove in all the way from Tomball, Texas. Yeah.
Where Catherine's never been.
And Catherine just came in from across the pond. What's up this morning, Catherine?
Nothing really. Good morning.
Good morning. All right. Yeah. Great show. And this is the Shrimp Tank. This is also the show that brings you live pitches of new business ideas from young entrepreneurs across the state of Texas. That's in our fall event that we're going to have at Sam Houston State University. And that's where these young entrepreneurs will pitch us their ideas, not to raise capital, but for mentorship. And we'll find out if their ideas will sink or swim in the tank. And so one of our co-hosts today, Chip Matthews, not in the studio, or Jamie Collins up at the university, they're dealing with a little bit of some summer school class schedule conflicts, but we're looking towards forward to having them back in when class resumes the regular fall schedule coming up. And actually, we're going to bring some students on board. What do you guys think about having some young people on?
We better have a censor on the show.
Or a reminder.
We don't know where that will go.
Actually, one of the next people we interview, Trey Diller from Sam Houston State University, you know, he's a young entrepreneur. He's coming up on the show. But today we've got a great show with Steve. We're going to get into his story a little bit. And, of course, we want to mention Ferrari. We normally shoot our shows in the Ferrari dealership. But what do they have going on down in Houston today, Catherine?
They've got an event with the top, is it 200 doctors of Houston at their Ferrari?
Top 200 doctors, and I guess all the staff from Ferrari.
Yeah,
and
they're all exciting.
Yeah. Are they going to have a free drawing?
I don't actually know what that means. Red.
A raffle for a
red.
Yeah, for a car.
One word, red.
We should have gone. That's it.
Yeah.
So this is the show for entrepreneurs. I just want to talk a little bit about entrepreneurship, a little bit about business, Steve, before we get into your story, before we really pick your brain for all of your knowledge and wisdom and things that you've learned along the way. But in starting a business and being an entrepreneur, there's a definition of that, and that's a person who organizes, operates a business or businesses, and by definition, they take on greater than normal financial risk in order to do so. Does that sound familiar?
Somewhat, yes, it does. There's a ring to that in my deep distant past.
You didn't have a guarantee of success when you started the business?
Not really, but I kind of started slow and pretty small to start, and I think that's one of the keys.
Yeah, you got to be willing to start. You know, I love entrepreneurs because I respect them so much. They put it on the line. There's a little taco business that we go to over here. In fact, I'd love to have them on the show. Hello, Taco. It's a great family little run business. And I thought about, you know, they lease this space, they buy all of this equipment, they probably cash their retirement accounts in, and they have no guarantee of any. They put it all on the line.
But there's no guarantees in life anyway, so you've just got to go for it, haven't you?
Leap of faith, and maybe you have that in your DNA or not. Mm. You know, I think one of the things.
Yeah, you must do, because some people just don't. They're just happy to sit and do the 9 to 5 and go home and not think about anything.
My wife does not have any entrepreneur DNA in her. She works at a company, been there 15 years. She likes the steady, you know, arrangement there. But I think it's got to be in your DNA. And Catherine made a great point. You know, half these small businesses, they fail anyway.
Mm-hmm. They do, yeah.
So one of the things I'm interested to talking about with Steve is how you went from nursing to what you're doing today. And then also his approach to starting his business, I think, is unique. And I'm very curious about some of the details about that, because what you're doing is a little bit non-traditional.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. When I started my business, I was in nursing for a number of years. I have a degree in business from UT in nursing. And basically, I just was looking for something a little different, something that no one really was else was doing. And so, a kind of a unique concept. Something where the competitive nature of the business wasn't going to be a stumbling block or, you know, something difficult early on in the business. And so originally I started Just Pure Flavors as a chutney type of organization. It was called originally the India Chutney Company before it was called Just Pure Flavors. And so the chutney type of a business, very European, Catherine, as I'm sure, you know, Europeans love chutneys.
Yes.
And basically, I thought, well, I'll sell a really high quality chutney product because my mother is Scottish and she taught me how to make really great chutneys as well. And so I thought, well, this would just fly really well. And when I started the business, I was doing it at La Cintera, which has a very large expatriate population. I thought this would be a great target demographic, you know. But basically, I ended up realizing that chutneys had a very, very long learning curve for Americans, which was kind of a stumbling block to selling the product to them somewhat. So I kind of changed gears, and Just Pure Flavors came around kind of as a subsequent concept with European-style products, jams, hot sauces, nut butters, right, that type of a thing. So,
well, when you said earlier about being unique, you definitely have achieved that because some of your
Thank
stuff
you.
Is really off the wall. And,
Thank you.
It's what caught my wife's eye years ago when she first met you.
Yeah. He's made great progress with the company, and we're going to be going doing a deep dive on that. And I think the couple things you said that, you know, unique, differentiator. And if you're listening to the show and you have any aspirations about being in any sort of business, entrepreneurial endeavor that is a food-related business, I think that we'll probably learn some unique things from you today that might be unique to food business, whether that's a product that's on the shelf somewhere or sold over the internet or...
the thing that jumps out at me where the audience should take notes is your marketing approach, because you've got some unique things there that seem to be really working.
Thank you.
And,
yeah, Tom.
I think we should talk about that for sure.
Yeah, yes. Thanks.
You're listening to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, where we interview Houston's best and brightest entrepreneurs, and we're in the studio today with Steve Maloof. Don't forget, you can always download a complete replay of the show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. One thing, guys, before we do this deep dive on Steve's story, I just wanted to share with you today something I read in Inc. magazine I thought would be relevant to what we're going to talk about. And Inc. magazine wrote an article about a simple formula. The title of the article was "The Secret to Why a Business Can Make You Wealthy." And they did this study. Actually, the study was done by the Forbes 400 richest people in the United States. And they found that 325 of them got on this list by applying this one simple formula. And the name of the formula is what they call business multiplier. And the formula has different levels. You know, when you, for example, your company, which is really an awesome company called JustPureFlavors.com, but one day it began as a thought in your mind, as all great companies did. If you look at any great company, ExxonMobil, DuPont, GM, any big successful endeavor company began in the mind of one person. So you have this level one, which they call value zero, and you may think about this as a business that has no value in the market at this time and place. It's just a launch. And then when you're in the early stages, it's really largely about survival. You're scrambling. You get to that early level two, you're scrambling for survival. Your company may be, you know, squeezing out a little bit of a profit, but usually we're pumping our money, you know, back into our companies, and we're not really a successful company yet. And then we get to another level that we gain traction. And what happens is after your company gains traction, it still is very limited because it generally demands the business owner to be ultimately involved in running all aspects of the business. But further down the road, after you have traction, a management team comes into place. And that's after that is when scalability comes into place. And so that's it's a great article. That's just a kind of a short synopsis of the stages and steps of building a business. And so...
So what's the formula? Is that
it's a four-step?
I want to know that.
The formula is you got to have a great idea, and you have to take it down in stages and steps, right, and you have to build an infrastructure before you can scale.
Right, okay.
Yep, yeah. And it's a management team that can free the entrepreneur, the business owner, so that he's... the business can run in his absence.
Because right, so it's about the people you've got surrounding you that will...
That's a great point, because without that, you don't really have a business, you have a job.
Yeah. That's true.
So that makes sense. So, Steve, where do you think your business is on that spectrum?
That's a good question, Tom. Actually, as you said, my business tends to be kind of untraditional in a lot of ways. And, you know, I respect a lot of what Forbes does. I've read some of their articles. They have some great material. Dan, that's a very interesting algorithm on that. And I went to UT for also for business degree, so I do have a marketing background and those types of things. And a lot of those structures and formats, they have good value in terms of analyzing certain types of, you know, business growth and development, things like that. My company doesn't really follow that mold too much, though, in a lot of ways. Mostly what I've done is kind of taken and kind of improvised a little bit with it. And, you know, for instance, I don't really use much in terms of a management team proper. Mostly I do most of the management for myself at this stage. But I can certainly see where there's a growth potential into that over time. And I do have some folks who work for me and help me at the market. So there is some of that. But basically, a lot of the models I studied, the strength, weakness, opportunity, threats model is one of my favorites. I've actually used that in analyzing my company. They do have some usefulness. But primarily, I like to, when I started my company, it was a focus primarily on sustainable competitive advantage over any potential competition. And really, I didn't want any competition at all. I wanted to be able to set the price for my product and not feel as if there was going to be any direct competition.
Because we all face commoditization in all of our businesses, right?
And today, I wanted to avoid commoditization. Exactly.
Who can do it at a cheaper price?
People have been selling jams for, you know, 100 and 200 years. So.
Exactly. I didn't want to compete on price, Tom.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And your product line is totally off the wall. It's very unique, and it has a big following, I think, or a growing following. And one of the other things that I think is really interesting about what you've done is that you've built a business without brick and mortar. You don't have four walls and a roof, and he's doing everything.
I'd like to hear about that.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, I actually worked for a while when I was younger at Burger King, and I got some of my inspiration for starting my current business when I was a manager. Burger King was in my early 20s, and basically what happened was Burger King, like McDonald's at that time, had an idea that their product should be completely... the same temperature anywhere you go, 167 degrees. The burger should always be the same temperature. Well, when I started my company, I realized that what customers really want is they want a consistent quality product. They want something, in my case, it's a high-end product, and pricing, of course, is always a consideration when you start a business. I've had pretty much the same price for a lot of my products for a number of years. So customers want consistently, they want the same product over and over and over again. As a small businessman, that's a very difficult thing to achieve. A continuous, consistent product is very hard to continuously do. And so that's one of the ways I've really tried to differentiate myself.
I do think that's quite nice in a way, though, that sometimes if you buy, say, for instance, one of your products and then it tastes slightly different the next time you buy it, I think that's great because you know then it's fresh. It's mm-hmm. not just it's not just been done in some factory where it's all exactly the same.
Yeah, everything you do is no preservatives, right?
Exactly, and
right, nothing artificial. Yep.
It's harder to pull off, right?
Yeah, yes. You can't, yeah.
Actually, we found, I don't know if Catherine pulled this from your website, but some of your tenets to success in product consistency was one of those core tenets that you've decided to build your business on. And with that, we're going to go to a quick commercial break. We're going to be back in about 30 seconds with our guest, Steve Maloof. And you're listening to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, a radio show for entrepreneurs. Don't forget, you can download a complete replay of the show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. Just Pure Flavors sells fresh, custom-designed, European-style, unusual low-sugar jams like our basil blackberry jam, unique fresh raw pistachio nut butter, bacon jalapeno jam, oh, that sounds good, raspberry and blueberry habanero, and we use only natural and organic ingredients. And we've been in business almost 7 years selling the kind of products that our upscale customers with discriminating palates cannot find anywhere else. You don't get this stuff in HEB. I'm telling you, it's
I looked at HEB.
It's incredible. Houstonians and Saudi sheiks agree. Just Pure Flavors are the finest and most expensive products in their classes on the planet, bar none. Okay, we're back, and we're back with the Shrimp Tank Podcast, broadcasting to you live every Thursday. Don't forget, you can download a complete replay of the show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. I am your host, Daniel Goodwin. Joining me in the studio today is Catherine Bakes, Tom Glover, and Steve Maloof. I'm stumbling on my words. All right. So where did we leave off there? We were talking about consistency. And so what did you do exactly, Steve, to ensure consistency with your product?
Well, essentially, it's a question in my mind of being able to reproduce the exact same design in the product over time. And so although, you know, it's difficult sometimes to really to be able to do that. Like when I make a change to one of my recipes, I always note that. So I have a record of pretty much of where I've been and where I'm going with different product designs. So it's really, that's where most of the fun is in my business, is in designing different products. I've got over 50 different products that I've developed over time. And
I have this perception you're like a mad scientist in the kitchen.
I know.
Where you're dreaming up all these weird combinations. Yes.
So have they all come from you? Are these
yes.
all, every
well,
single
yeah.
one of you?
No, I can't say that. My mother is, honestly, Catherine, my mother's my inspiration with this. She actually got me started in making
right.
jams, taught me how to make jams, European style product
right.
jams.
Yeah.
And actually, my original best-selling product was a raspberry jam that I still sell, that a lot of people think is the best they've ever really tasted.
Right.
And then from there, I kind of built onto different product designs with that.
Right.
So you have a passion for jams that you built a business around,
yes.
and it seems like you've got, again, a unique approach to what you're doing. These weird combinations of flavors, though. I want to know where you're
this
dreaming this stuff
weird.
Up.
I love it. I got to ask this, though. I mean, see, I cook in the kitchen, and most of my stuff comes out pretty good, but every once in a while, I have a flop, and I'm my own harshest critic.
Don't believe
No, I'll tell my wife, this is terrible. This didn't, it's a flop. It didn't pan out. Do you ever cook up something, and you go, you know what, this is just nasty?
Yes. I've done that a few times, and, you know, the good thing about those is that you can just kind of discreetly, you know, put them off somewhere and forget about them.
Yeah.
And they go away over time. And but I've made a few products that I'm just, yeah. And I'm continuously trying new things like that.
That's it.
You have to be, and I think one of the keys, you know, for my business is to never really be afraid to make a mistake with a product design. You have to be willing to just kind of put yourself out there and say, okay, what would this taste like? What does this look like? How would this taste? My best seller is a bacon jalapeno jam,
yes.
and I came up with it.
Yeah,
I actually... Yeah,
is that the one we're going to get to try after the show?
Yeah.
Because
oh,
Catherine
certainly.
Brought some
you know,
crackers.
I was really happy to hear he brought samples because I was going to complain. There are no samples here.
I'll have it for you.
Should we go to a long commercial break and try some bacon jalapeno jam? So one of your other tenets on this from your website was innovation, and that's exactly it. Now, you talked about cooking up these things. Tom brought up an excellent point about that. I've seen artists that... you know, do paintings and, you know, crinkle them up and throw most of them away till before they get the one that they really like. And so I think innovation involves experimentation and really coming up with something that before it really clicks. That's pretty awesome. So so you got in the business and kind of how did you start? How did you launch? You know, maybe you at one point you must have had your first product. How did you kind of get that to market?
Well, actually, in terms of the marketing aspect of things, I looked back a little bit on some of my marketing training and thought about what are called the four P's of the marketing: product, price, promotion, and place. And essentially, I considered, you know, what type of product I wanted to sell. It needed to be something that customers would, number one, it really had to stand out. If it was going to be something priced at pretty much $12 and up for an 8-ounce jar of jam, it really needed to be something which people would say, wow. That's maybe the best product I've ever tasted or best jam I've ever tasted. So that's kind of what's one of my main criteria in product design was it has to be something that is just going to really get someone's attention and really make them think this is something that's, you know, really unique. And so my byline pretty much, you know, I wanted to stay very close to focus with my byline on that. And when I started the jam aspect of the business, that was really it. I stayed very laser focused on product design that fit my byline, which is custom design, limited production, totally unique flavors to the discriminating palate. And that hasn't changed. And actually, my price point hasn't changed either over time. A lot of things about my business are pretty consistent through time over the 7 years I've owned the company. So, and I tried to kind of make that happen.
And the other thing that jumps out at me is that you're not just selling jams that people would put on, you know, a cracker or something like that. Right. There are foodies out there that are just, you know, loving your products. My wife is one of them. She cooks for a hobby, and she uses a lot of your products in her recipes. She calls it the secret ingredient.
Thank you. Yeah, Kim is one of my great customers.
Yeah.
She really
He's
is.
Selling a unique experience.
Right.
That's
right?
it. Exactly.
A flavor you
He's
can't get
commoditized.
Anywhere else.
You guys notice the parallel between Steve's product and the Ferrari product, mm-hmm. okay? Yeah. You know, Ferrari only sells 7,500 cars a year. They're all sold before they're built. Wow. And they don't compete on price. They're selling a unique experience.
They are what they are.
Yeah, and they're not trying to appeal to the Walmart crowd. They're going for a high end. They're, you know, and that's maybe one of the pitfalls of a lot of businesses. They try to be all things to everybody, right?
You really can't do that if you're going to. That's exactly right, Dan. And as you said, Ferrari sells a wonderful, very fun product, and that's kind of what we do too as well. When people come to my booth at a market or, you know, come to me about a product, it has to be fun for people as well. Unique and fun, I think, are important aspects of it.
So brings up an interesting point about the fact that when you're selling your product, you're doing it in a way at the market where you make people feel invited. So you have samples sitting out there ready to go. Yes. People can just come up and enjoy.
You probably got to try it.
Other vendors at the market, you know, you have to kind of ask them about their product. But here you can just walk up and you can try it. You're very generous about it. But the other thing I think is interesting is that your products are so unique, but they're really high quality. And you're not trying to be another jam. You're trying to be something different.
The Ferrari of jams.
Right, the Ferrari of jams. And that's why he can get $12 a bottle for this little, you know, jar of yummininess.
We got a new tagline for you, the Ferrari of jams. Just
the Ferrari of jams. I want to be able to use that. You're not going to copyright that on me.
With regards to your products, obviously it's like one of a kind and it's probably the best. If like, say, a big firm came to you and said, I want to buy that, I want that, and I want my name in it, what would you do?
Well, at one point, I actually was interested in that, an approach to that, and I have contacted, and this was years ago, but I did contact corporations with the intent of doing that, you know, developing the business and then selling it to a large
high organization. High-end, I mean, I'm talking, at home, we've got Harvey Nichols. They sell very
European-style jam manufacturer.
Fortnum and Mason's, very nice. Harrods.
Yes.
You've obviously got the same equivalent here that,
you know,
places
in
New York. I mean, you must have it here. So, you know, that they do pay millions and millions to have a product like that
of pounds.
And sell for £20 a little jar.
Yes.
And people buy it.
Yes.
People go in at Christmas. I bought it myself. Those sort of things.
Yeah. And I sell a $22 jar of raw pistachio nut butter as well to people. It's 8 ounces. And the idea of selling the business, honestly, as time has gone by, I've realized that, you know, I can't think of anything else I'd really rather honestly be doing. And so if I sold it, I might have difficulty trying
to
think of
something else
to do is my really biggest concern. But I've actually considered that over the years. And the thing is, large companies, honestly, in my experience, I've found that large companies tend to want to, and I don't want to say they want to steal your product design, but they'd rather maybe copy it or push you off
concept.
A shelf in a grocery store if they could. You know, that's just the model, basically. You know, large organizations have, it's a number of advantages, the scale issue and other things. And kind of along that same line, at one point I did look into putting my products in grocery stores, and I was approached by them to do that. Whole Foods, organizations like that.
Sounds like a Whole Foods thing.
Whole Foods, yeah.
Yes, and they're a great organization, and HEB and companies like that in Houston. But the issue really at that point is you become, when you put a product on the shelf, and like what Tom was saying about my products, the sampling of my products is really a crucial aspect of selling them to customers.
And the exclusivity. Being exclusive is like what most people will pay for more than the product.
People will pay anything for something unique like that.
Very true, but the taste, when people taste the product, they can get a sense, because if I put a $12 jar of jam on a shelf at HEB,
they're not going to buy it.
People don't. Unless I'm sampling there 24 hours a day.
And with that in mind, we're going to go to another commercial break. We'll be back in about 30 seconds. We're in the studio with our guest Steve Maloof, and you're listening to the Shrimp Tank, broadcasting to you live. We'll be right back.
Nothing stirs the soul of automobile enthusiasts the way the word Ferrari does. Over 60 years of legendary success on the world's greatest racetracks and road cars of unmatched beauty, craftsmanship, and performance have made Ferraris the most coveted sports cars in the world. Ferrari's newest state-of-the-art boutique and atelier design center is now open in the Woodlands at 1501 Lake Robbins Drive, two blocks east from Cinemark 17. Please visit and let us show you why there is nothing like a Ferrari.
There is nothing like a Ferrari. Hey, we're back. I'm your host, Daniel Goodwin, live at the Shrimp Tank Podcast. And you can hear us every Thursday where we broadcast. Do not forget, if you go onto the website, houston.shrimptankpodcast.com, listen to the show, put your name and email in there, you'll get all our shows to pop right into your inbox.
Yes,
and you can listen to all, I mean, we've had amazing, amazing suite of entrepreneurs that have come onto the show. Wouldn't you say, guys?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. We've had some.
And you know what?
People.
Everyone has their own unique, you know, this is the food business, and we've talked about tax and business planning and all different aspects. One thing that jumped out at me is, as I'm listening to you speak, Steve, is that I can tell you've had some business training, and you've mentioned some different things that seem to be taught at business school. I don't know if I heard you use some of the phraseology from the Entrepreneur Operating System or some other sort of business book, but I suspect that you're a student of business just beyond being a student of your products that you create. So could you tell us a little bit about that, about kind of some of the tenets that you build your business on?
Certainly, yeah. Actually, of course, I went to UT San Antonio, got a marketing degree, and I found that that was really a good precursor to the kind of the mindset, the entrepreneurial mindset, in terms of, you know, looking at life while in terms of how can I do something differently, better, cheaper, faster. I kind of think that's a mindset that you can develop over time. And, you know, there's kind of an interesting concept in terms of, well, are entrepreneurs born? Are they made, or do they grow, or what occurs with it? And I tend to think that you can actually learn the mindset of an entrepreneur. And over years, I've kind of tried to do some of that in looking at how things can be done differently, or how we can have you can have a different perspective on any type of something that you're doing, whether it's you know, going to the gym, or you know, your exercise equipment, or whether you're making jam. There's always a different way to do it, a different approach.
I always notice about entrepreneurs as well, they continue to work mm-hmm. very late in life because yes. they never stop. They don't
turn off.
They don't want to stop. They don't want to do it every day. You think
I thought you were going to say late at night.
No. You're like, well, I know, late
you're like all these business emails I send you, you know, right?
Well, I always answer them.
Yeah, right.
I always answer them.
Yeah, we're working early and we're working late,
like,
and it's your baby. It's right.
Right. It is exactly.
It's not
you
job.
Wake up in a
it's
cold sweat.
Job.
Yeah. You know, you sit up bolt right in bed. That's kind of how the bacon jalapeno jam came to me. And it was... the thing about that is it really was, you know, you talk about design, and sometimes you have to... With a product, you kind of do have to reiterate and make different versions of it until you get the right one. But with the bacon jalapeno jam, I pretty much knew exactly what I wanted, and it came out exactly the way it is now, the very first time I made it. So some things come to you, and they're just pretty much exactly the way you get it. Other times you have to, you know, change the product a little bit until it's exactly what you're looking for. Or even, like a lot of times at my booth, one of my best sources of feedback is obviously my customers
yes.
at the booths.
Yeah.
I talk to them, I say, what's that taste like for you? What do you think of that? And also I get good product ideas from customers at the booths. So there's really a lot of my marketing approaches comes directly from
you're
my
in direct
contact
with your customers
yes.
on a daily basis. So I wanted mm-hmm. to talk a little bit about the fact that you're primarily selling your product during farmers markets.
That's correct.
Or, yeah. So mm-hmm. no storefront. You're not moving it through grocery stores
no.
like we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. And by the way, my view is you'd probably have to put preservatives and stuff like that, which might change the products. I don't know if that would be, you know, the case or
the
not.
Shelf life. You'd
yes, the yep. shelf life would be definitely affected. And that's one of the things is a you know a lot of times like one of my best selling products is a strawberry mango jam. Well, we make that every week, you know, sometimes a day before the market, maybe a day or two before the market. So there's a large difference. If you look at a strawberry jam on the shelf, strawberries particularly, I don't want to get off of too many details about this, but strawberries particularly sensitive to sitting on a shelf.
They spoil very quickly.
Exactly,
yeah.
Catherine.
Yeah.
It looks a little browner after a very short time, a couple mm-hmm. of weeks, 3 weeks. It looks much different than a product that was made 2 or 3 days ago. So my customers recognize that. You know, they're looking at the product, they're tasting the product. It looks different because it looks like a strawberry should look, a strawberry jam that was just made, and it tastes different. So, And those are two of the big factors of my customers that really sell the product to them. They're looking at it and they're saying, well, this really is something I can't buy in the grocery store. And that's one of the big points I make to my customers is that, you know, you really, this is a unique product for a number of different reasons. You know, it was made without anything artificial. You know, so it's safer.
Do you have a lot of red tape with that where you have to follow?
That's what I was wondering about.
Good question. Yeah. Government.
They're very strict, aren't they? Yeah.
Well, there is government regulation
dairy
involved.
And
yes.
That sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
like,
you
they
know,
show up at your commercial kitchen and.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I actually did have a inspection of my commercial kitchen. I did have that. And I have a food manufacturer's license, and you have to buy that. And there's always a regulatory component you have to pay very close attention to.
Yeah.
Exactly,
very
Dan.
Strict, yeah.
Yes, it is. And, you know, if you pay attention to the P's and Q's, it's pretty straightforward, but you learn it over time as well.
So there's a couple things I want to touch on real quick. One is, what are some of the key skills that you learned either through UT or whatever that have made you successful in what you're doing? And then I'm sure one of them is, you know, the marketing background you have. And there's a few things that you do from a marketing standpoint that are really awesome. So I'll start with the second thing, and then we can go backwards. One of the things my wife said is that your booth and the presence you have at the farmers market, first of all, you've got some sort of a blackboard that blocks traffic and pretty much forces them to come in.
It does,
and then you
yeah.
got all these samples sitting right there.
Yes.
So the other thing that jumps out at us is the labeling. You've got a very simple message. The product information's right there. So just, you know, what's your perspective on your marketing approach and other skills that you are applying to make your business successful?
Okay, that's a great question. Thanks, Tom. Well, basically, when it comes to marketing, my approach is you should make the product as easy to buy for the customer as possible. Whatever you can do to do that is crucial to the sales of the company. So, for instance, I have Square. I use the Square at my booth, and customers really appreciate that. You know, a lot of times people don't carry cash much anymore, so I find that my sales would drop pretty dramatically without being able to make that an easy thing for my customers. Secondarily, as you mentioned about the samples, I have sometimes 10, 15 different samples of products there for people, and when they come to the booth, you know, I tell them pretty much which products, you know, I have out, and then they gravitate to whichever product they're interested in tasting or trying. But a lot of my marketing is really focused, kind of laser focused on simple ways of making the product accessible and easy for my customers to purchase. And I think that's one of the big keys in marketing, personally, is my approach.
Keep it simple and easy access.
Mm-hmm. Do you sell online as well?
Yes, I do sell online.
Right.
And you ship pretty much anywhere, right?
We do. We ship all over the world.
Now's a good time to maybe mention your website.
Yes, justpureflavors.com.
Just very easy.
That's simple.
That's the marketing simplicity, right? The branding is.
Yeah, thank you. And a question, an interesting concept on the branding is I've done a few other things on occasion with branding. And I find, actually, at one point I had TexasBaconJam.com and a few other different design concepts that I wanted to brand in a different light for different types of markets. So the branding aspect is a big factor, because you want to the product to the customer that you're directly targeting, or you know, for it is really crucial. You have to, you know, and knowing your customer, of course, kind of is where I'm going with that. It's a know your customer concept.
Yep.
For instance, I've got a rhubarb jam. It's not a strawberry rhubarb jam. It's a rhubarb strawberry jam, because we use mostly rhubarb in the jam, which is crucial for people who really love rhubarb. You don't buy a strawberry rhubarb jam because you love the strawberry.
It's more sour.
Right, exactly, Dan. Yeah. You buy it because you love the rhubarb. So I kind of there are gradations of customer demographics even within types of products that I sell. I sell a strawberry mango jam, rhubarb strawberry jam. So we have three or four different kinds of products, and just break it down into segments, product segments for different types.
So that's interesting. You have to you're paying attention to how you're naming the product based on
exactly.
where you want it. That's very interesting.
It's
so
important.
I do that with spaghetti sauce. I know it's completely different, but I look at the jar and I see what it's got the most of in. Whether I like garlic the most, I'll buy the one with the most garlic in.
Mm.
And that's
right
from the back, because it's always the first one that's got the, you know, the label on the back.
You're paying attention to how the label and exactly what it tells you about the product.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what we do as well with that, Catherine.
I thought I was a bit mad.
So so I have a question. I can see the benefit of helping the customers really learn about the product so they know what they like and they want to order it later online. Tell us where you see this business going for you 5 years down the road.
Okay. Well, honestly, this business is the type of thing where it's been growing very well. Over the years, my sales have gone up year over year, and it's really a lot of fun, this doing what I do with this. As far as the future direction of the company, farmers markets are a unique opportunity. As Tom mentioned earlier, brick and mortar has a lot of really severe limitations. Fixed costs are astronomical with a lot of that right. type of thing. And a number of years ago, I always thought I'd really love to own a restaurant or that type of concept. But fixed costs just really kill you, you know, and you're trying to maybe sweat, you know, monthly doing things with the bills. So, but the great thing about farmers markets is kind of like what I call guerrilla marketing. You're basically there for a very short time, and you're hopefully facing a very upscale audience in some of the markets around Houston, Tomball.
Sure.
You're looking for a very upscale demographic, obviously, with the types of products I sell. So I do sell at three markets around Houston. It would be Bridgeland, West Chase District, and Tomball. Those are the three markets I currently attend, and then my online sales. But as far as the future direction, I'm always looking for opportunity for new markets coming to Houston. Houston is great with that. There's always a new market somewhere that you know that you can talk to folks and find a new opportunity with that. And I'm actually currently now looking into some new markets, you know, managing them. I'm actually looking to kind of move more into the potential for helping to manage markets in key areas in Houston. I see a couple areas I'm very interested in.
Every show, you're talking, Dan, about how Houston has been a hotbed for business of all
yes.
sizes and shapes.
My goodness, yeah. If you were going to start a new business, where would you want to be besides in Texas in particular? I think, you know, here in Houston. By the way, if you're just tuned in, if you're listening to the Shrimp Tank podcast, this is the show where we interview Houston's best and brightest entrepreneurs. We're live in the studio today with Steve Maloof. Do not forget, you can always download a complete replay of the show and have all of our other shows sent to you at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. Okay, we're going to shift it up here, shift gears a little bit, guys. We got a commercial break coming up in just a moment, but going to rapid fire a few little questions at you, Steve. And
all right.
It's called our hot or not section, and we're going to ask you how you feel about something. Just give us a quick, short answer, hot or not. We're guys, the producer's giving me some hand signals over there about hey, we're covering up chewing up a lot of our time already, so we're gonna have to move through some of this a little faster. But
let's end the show so we can get to the samples. That's what I want.
yeah, I'm all for that. So hot or not, Steve?
Yes.
Hiring family members, hot or not?
No, definitely not. No, I've done that, and it's
tough firing your relatives, isn't it?
It is. I've had to do
I've
that.
Done it.
Tough making them work.
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
You
yeah.
fired your
Honestly.
Relatives?
I fired my daughter.
Really?
Yeah.
My brother.
She was lazy.
Wow. Was that was that the Facebook post the other day?
Oh, no, I'll tell you about that one.
How about a business plan, hot or not?
Not. Honestly, I'm not conventional with that at all. Mostly, comes from the heart. More kind of just, you know, thought processes, kind of putting things together for me.
I think that's great. You know, you hear a lot of people say you have to have a business plan, but, you know, you think about pouring a lot of time and energy into a business plan, and it's like almost like a financial plan. Like, once the ink's dry, it's kind of so it's, for some people, they run it off a more live dynamic set of metrics. Mm-hmm. Advertising your business, hot or not?
Not either. My business is built completely by word of mouth. Actually, I can't say that. I'm sorry. That's not true. I do have, and Tom, on the marketing aspect of things, I didn't get to it, but what I do with my primary marketing tool, besides those three signs that stick out, you know, at the market, mm-hmm. are I do a MailChimp. I have a number of different lists from a MailChimp, and I find that to be very, and every week I send either a recipe or I send a new product information to my customers. So that's my primary marketing tool out, you know, social. I do have a Facebook page, of course, as well, but that type of thing. But I find that word of mouth is still my overwhelming.
That's for successful businesses. That's usually a key success factor.
But here's a takeaway. If you're an entrepreneur, you're listening to this show, you cannot take what Steve's doing as gospel for the way you need to do it for your business.
Yeah,
you know
I
what?
Think that's different.
It's everybody's situation is different, and we don't have, you know, great blanket advice. You can't cue in on one thing that's really dynamic and successful for you. That's why the more you know, the better educated you are. And maybe there's an application for, hey, I can tell you there's some businesses they cannot survive without advertising. That doesn't mean that's right for you. So you got to think for yourself, know your own business. And
exactly,
hey, I'd say listen to a lot of our shows because you will find different things that apply for your specific and unique business. And by the way, the producer's telling me we need to go to another commercial break. We're going to be right back in 30 seconds. You're listening to the Shrimp Tank, broadcasting to you live with our guest, Steve Maloof, and we will be right back.
Is planning, saving, and investing for retirement been in your to-do list for far too long? Then look no further than right here in the Woodlands with the coaches of Provident Wealth Advisors. Don't put planning for your future off any longer. Get started today. Call us on 281-466-4843 or visit us at the web providentwealthllc.com.
Fee-based in investment advisory services are offered by Provident Wealth Advisors, a registered investment advisor in the state of Texas, and insurance products and services are offered through Goodwin Financial Group. Provident Wealth Advisors and Goodwin Financial Group are affiliated companies. And we are back. So we're, what's our time, Betsy? How are we doing on time? Okay, so we're going to have to move fast, guys.
Plead the fifth. I always like that.
Yeah, okay, plead the fifth.
We like that.
We had a lot of additional questions, but our plead the fifth section's kind of fun.
No. Oh, no.
We're going to ask you a few questions.
You only get one.
And you get a free spin. You get to plead the fifth on one. So okay. Our intention is to grill you a little bit here, to make you a little uncomfortable.
All right.
Ask you some tougher questions that... we'll just jump right in. So let me give the first one. And is it a good idea to marry an entrepreneur?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
It is. You know, just the whole synergy of that is right up there. It's awesome to do that.
Yeah, if you okay. can. Is your wife an entrepreneur?
I'm divorced. But no, my wife was not an entrepreneur.
I think he's looking for an entrepreneur, right?
That's why he's just said, yes, it's a good idea.
Any female entrepreneurs listening, you know, he's okay. Have you ever had two employees hook up in the work environment?
Never. Never happened.
Never?
In between the strawberry mango jam or something?
Yeah.
You know, like,
meet, it's being rude
meet
now.
Me, meet me at the fig jam. Right?
That's organic okay. fig jam with brandy in it, by the way.
Oh.
A brandy extract, sir.
Did you ever come close to missing payroll?
Never.
Never?
Never.
Okay,
had.
He's solid. Wow, runs the books and records. Okay. All right. Who's your most fierce competitor?
Well, my business honestly does not have direct competition for the niche that I'm in.
Gotta love that.
Yeah. No direct
well, that's
competition.
The thing. Yeah, there is nobody that's doing what he's doing that I've seen,
thank
right?
You, Tom. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very differentiated.
Thank you. Yeah, okay. I appreciate that.
All right, we're not making him squirm yet. He's just like you know, wrapping these off. I mean, we're going to have to get some tougher questions like, you know, boxers or briefs or something. I don't know. Okay, how about this? Trump or Hillary?
Definitely Trump.
Yes!
Definitely.
Attaboy!
The Donald.
Attaboy. Attaboy. You know,
change in America.
Shipping a case of your bacon peanut butter or something like that.
I don't want to get too political right now, but I got to tell you, I'm praying for this guy because you know what? He's having to take on a whole crooked, crooked political system of both Republicans and Democrats. And,
very true.
And he's having to take the media on, and it's
he's having
brutal.
A tough time
it
at
is
the
brutal
moment.
Out there.
It's really bad.
I want to
it
remind
really
our listeners of something right now that you might find helpful is that exactly this time of the year in 1980, Ronald Reagan was trailing Jimmy Carter by 20 points in the polls, and Ronald Reagan was called every filthy, nasty name imaginable. They said he was unfit to lead.
Wow.
Okay, yeah. Does that sound familiar?
Yes.
Yeah, we
this
heard that is, in the news recently. He only won in a landslide 90 days later, won 44 states, and the United States cut taxes and had the biggest economic recovery in the last 100 years. And so,
whether it's local or national, politics in our country
it needs to change.
Nice
it's,
people
it's
don't
shocking.
Stay
it's
away.
Shocking.
Yes,
so
very
shocking.
True.
We're not one of these politically correct, opaque shows. Hey, you know, we can be different. I think
right.
it's okay to be different.
I think they've gone a bit low, though, Dan. I think they're both now being a bit. You know, they're hitting below the belt, and people are looking at him saying,
yeah, well,
that's not
Trump's
right.
a counterpuncher. You know, you
no.
punch him, he's going to punch back. But
he's not a quitter. That's
he may,
like
he, he
Trump.
May be a little bit of a loose cannon with some of his words at times, but he's not a absolutely well-documented known liar. With that, let's move on, right?
Yeah, we lost half the audience.
Yeah,
so.
Okay. No. Who's the best-looking entrepreneur you know?
That would be Jessica Alba.
Oh.
Her, what's the name of it? Safe or safety or What's the name of that company she owns?
Honest.
Honest. Yeah. Honest.
Yeah, we haven't. We
what
haven't.
Is the only thing, or perfume or something. What'd she do?
No, it's products.
It's like baby clothes or baby. I think she started out with baby
lotions,
diapers,
creams,
lotions,
that
creams.
Sort of
yes.
Things, baby wipes and so. It's mm-hmm. very natural yeah. line that All you
right.
can have for your baby.
Let's dump this guy here. You know what? Steve's just too cool of a cucumber. We got to give him a little harder time. You know. So Steve, okay. What's the one thing you're most afraid of?
That would be I'd be afraid of being afraid to make a mistake in business. The fear of being afraid to make a mistake, because when you have your own business, you make an occasional mistake. And you have to be willing to do that and to be able to move on.
And learn from it.
And learn. Yeah. Exactly.
Do you have an example of a mistake?
An example
Here's
of a mistake.
Here's where he's going to plead the fifth.
I do have an example of that, actually. I made, with marketing, revenues minus expenses equals net income is basically the way I run my company. And, it's basically the bottom line that really comes in with that. But what you're really looking to do is to find the product mix that your customers really want. And sometimes I just come up with products that don't really fit within that market. And so occasionally I'll come up, and that's really what I end up with.
Do you have to invest a lot to have a new product?
Not a lot necessarily, no. It depends on, sometimes I go to events. Like, actually in January I went to the Zest Fest, and I just did a new brand with that. It's called Casa de Habanero. So I actually have some products that are rebranded a little bit like that. So, and I made some product design changes there and things. And sometimes it's the product design change that you think, well, that didn't work. So you'd have to, and I always try to remember the basic bottom line is if it's not broken, really just don't fix it under any circumstances, sometimes that's difficult in business because you're thinking, well, I want to make it better. I want to increase my sales. But staying with the concept of just it's not broken. You don't need to fix it. It's doing well.
Stay in discipline. And with that, mm-hmm. I'm getting that discipline look from our producer right now. She's showing me the clock. Uh-oh. She's saying we have to wrap it up. And so, Steve, please remind us again of how our listeners would get in touch with you to get to learn more about your business, your products. Why don't you share with our listeners online the website address and a phone number maybe for you?
Great. Okay. My website address is justpureflavors.com. My cell is 281-702-0905. I can be contacted directly that way. You can also contact me through my website. And we're at, again, three markets around Houston. Weekly at the Tomball Market every Saturday from 9 to 1. We're at West Chase District Thursdays from 3 to 7. And the Bridgeland Market every second Sunday of the month from 12:30 to 3:30. So those are the primary ways to contact me. And
visit before lunch because he's got samples.
Yeah,
yes, I do. There you go.
The store is open 24/7 online, and he's got some really cool things that you just have to try. They're unique experiences. I've really loved the conversation. I think we've all had a really good visit with you today,
Thank
and
you.
We're excited.
I appreciate
to,
the opportunity. Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, to learn more about the food business and learn about your more entrepreneurial success and your experience. And so we're going to wrap it up today. We're about to go downstairs in the kitchen and get to try some of this cool stuff out. So thank you for being on the show. It's a wonderful show. And don't forget, for our listeners, you can tune in every Thursday, and you can download a complete replay of the show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. That's all. Welcome to the Shrimp Tank. Doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This is just what I do, and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, but homie, keep going. You know the saying, you gon' reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016. Like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general, from the front, I'm a leader. The charge like a federal fell on my lap, never going hard as ever. The results match the effort. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank, big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.